This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tea Clinic. One visit can change your life. Men's Tea Clinic offers a variety of men's wellness programs to help you meet your goals and keep you as strong as you've ever been. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEA today or visit menstclinic.com. That's menstclinic.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Good morning, DFW. Sean and RJ 105 through the Fan. I'm RJ Choppy. He's Bobby Belt, Peyton, and Aiden alongside. Sean back next week.
And then he's off the week after, I'm guessing?
No, he's back. He's back. Yes.
Here's fun. We're all going to be back together on Monday, right?
Uh-huh.
Yes. No, we're not.
What?
This dope. Jury duty.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's out Rockwell Monday. Got me, man.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's exciting.
First time ever.
Yeah, I've never had it yet. I haven't had it. I can't wait.
You've never even been called in?
I've never even been summoned.
Really?
No.
I'm getting all yours then. I've been summoned probably five times.
They know me. They know. Like they must know that like I look at things in such a strange way.
They heard better
they
call
They just
Chop.
Google you. That's right.
Yeah, that's right. They should know what the Roman Coliseum should have done.
Yeah. I don't have Google
so
in Rome.
You don't know. Do you want to get selected? Like, I really want a murder trial or like something sinister.
Dude, I'll be honest. When I used to think like, ooh, I want to be on a jury. That'd be fun. The very first case I got upstairs for, because you start in this bottom room, then they take you upstairs in Dallas County, or at least they took me upstairs. They took us upstairs for the jury pool, and then they picked out of that. And I remember sitting there thinking, this guy was facing life in prison because it was a third strike for a drug offense, and he had a gun in the car or something, and so it was like upgraded to a felony. I don't remember the specifics of it. Something about it, and the number was, he was facing a big time, like, penalty where he was probably not going to get out again. Mm. And I remember just sitting there thinking to myself while I was going through questions, I was like, I don't think I want to make a decision of whether this guy's going to like be able to live his life again or not.
Oh, no.
Whether he deserves it or not, like, I don't want to be the one making that call.
No.
Like, I just sat there, I was like, yeah, I don't want to do this.
It's tough.
This like legitimately kind of makes me, I thought I'd have more of the nerve to stand in there and just do it. And then I was like, no, I don't think I want to be part of this.
Man, only break one law at a time, though. That's the rule. That's what I live by.
I mean, it sounded like he did. It just sounded like he did it three times.
Well, but he had
the gun
broke,
too.
He had the gun, so he broke two laws at the time.
Yeah.
So you can't do that. Only one at a time. But that's so Sean's back next week. But Peyton, of course, good luck. Good luck on the jury.
Watch him
man.
Get picked. Now.
I hope you get picked. I hope you're out for like 3 weeks.
Jeez.
And you're like you're $11 a day or whatever it is.
He's a foreman. He's a foreman.
They got the foreman.
Jury, have you reached your decision? Because that is right.
He'll be the John Cusack of the jury. Get Gene Hackman out here.
I'm being honest. I would not mind Peyton on my jury. I feel like Peyton would be a good person.
I think he'd be sensible.
I think Peyton's fairness would be good to have on a jury.
Yeah, he'd be very, very sensible. What is the latest on Jeff Ulbrich, the Falcons defensive coordinator?
We said this as we were wrapping up the show yesterday, but Atlanta Falcons defensive coordinator Jeff Ulbrich, this is from ESPN, apologized publicly Wednesday for the leak of the Shador Sanders phone number and his son using it to prank call the quarterback during the NFL draft. The Falcons were fined $250,000 and Ulbrich himself fined $100,000 in response to the situation. Ulbrich said, quote, "My actions of not protecting confidential data were inexcusable. My son's actions were absolutely inexcusable, and for that, we are both deeply sorry." Ulbrich's 21-year-old son admitted to the prank call and apologized in an Instagram post on Sunday. The Falcons said in a statement Sunday that Jax Ulbrich wrote down the number from his father's open iPad while visiting his parents' home, quote, to later conduct a prank call. The NFL said the fines were for, quote, failing to prevent the disclosure of confidential information distributed to the club in advance of the NFL draft. So I guess the way this works, the way I heard it yesterday, was that the NFL distributes this number list in a confidential delivery mm-hmm. to the general manager, the owner, and right. somebody else. And that then the team is responsible for
doling it out
to people within their organization. But then they're not supposed to take it and distribute it out or have it laying right. out in the open like this. So Ulbrich said, "I promise my son and I will work hard to demonstrate We are better than this. Ulbrich said he was not aware of what happened until after the draft, and he was, quote, not happy and shocked when he was informed. Ulbrich said he then made the Falcons aware of the situation and then worked to contact Sanders and his family. Shador and his father, Dion, who is a legendary former Falcons player, were, quote, amazingly gracious, more gracious than they needed to be in a moment like this, Ulbrich said. So now the question is, if your kid, Chop, Luca, Julian, let's be honest, based on how you've talked about it, more likely Julian, I feel like, would get you in trouble. But if Julian got you in trouble to the extent
absolutely, Julian,
that you were on the hook now for $100,000, what's the reaction?
I have...
Is he just permanently working it off in chores or something like that? Or do you just say, that's the cost of being a dad in some instances, and I'm just going to have to take this and be upset for a little bit?
Look, if you want to have bad chores done, then have my kids do them. If you want to have things done half-assed, have my kids do them. Luca apparently mowed the lawn in his mom's house the other day, missed like half the grass, and then decided to leave the bag completely full of the grass clippings. Just walked away. Like he halves everything.
I remember Chris.
He had his retainer that we got, right?
Yeah.
Guess where it is? The dog's stomach.
Oh, perfect.
And he goes, well, it's not my fault. It was in the case. It's supposed to be in your mouth.
Oh. Well, there's that. He can take it out when he eats, though, right? He's got to take it out when he eats.
Yeah, this was during day at school.
Oh, okay. Well.
So what?
Yeah. That's not as good an excuse.
Didn't have it in the army.
This is... Jacob one time, when Jacob was going through his half-assing stage while he was in high school, Kristen was having him help blow up these beach balls for some party they were doing. I don't remember, but there were like these beach balls that they'd blow up, and she blew hers up and she put it on the counter, and he had blown up the other one, and she looked over at it and she took a picture and sent it to him, and she's like, this is a great representation of the effort he's giving these days. And hers was fully expanded. His was like 90%, like it was like just blow it up the rest blow of the way up. Dude,
they that's their just, kids, that's what they do.
But this would, my dad would, if I did this, my dad back when he's getting a little gentler in his old age, a little bit more emotional things, like, you know, he's spending more time watching like soldiers coming home and their dogs see him for the first time. Those are the videos he watches these days. That's the kind of stage of his life he's at. But back in the day, my dad was not to be messed with, and he could be hard ass. If I did something like this, I would have been too afraid to even try this. I would have been afraid that my dad's going to find out.
Yeah.
Even if he's not going to get fined, my dad's going to find out I did this, and he's going to kill me for doing this. I'm not doing it. But if I cost him $100,000, and I get it's different, we're talking about the NFL. Scale it to our life. 10,000?
How about 1,000?
No, 10,000. No, because I mean, I still think that if you're talking about like Jeff Ulbrich, I would imagine his salary is not 100 times more than yours, or doesn't have like he's just an assistant coach. Yeah. So I guess closer, maybe it's like 10 times more or something like that.
So 10,000.
So you're talking about $10,000. If you incurred a $10,000 like pay up fine right then from something dumb your kid did.
They're on probation for the rest of their life.
I don't think I'm not gonna think fondly of them for a while. I'm gonna be pretty upset.
That's terrible. I don't know what I would do. I know what you're gonna say. The easy thing is, man, they need to come to Jesus meeting. You got to spank them. I'm not spanking a 15-year-old.
Oh no,
kid.
I'm just gonna be mad.
Yeah,
I'm gonna be mad for a long time.
Spanking a 15-year-old.
They're gonna ask to do things. I'm gonna go no.
Yeah, the answer is no.
No, you're not doing anything.
First of all, that car that I was gonna give you, I'm now selling it. I'm selling that car.
You're not getting the maxi.
You're not getting the car. You pay your own insurance now.
Ooh, you're there
cut
you go.
Off. There you are.
Yeah, I don't care that the law says you can be on until 26. You're right. Off. By the way, Abdul Carter, they announced he had been prank called during the draft too. So this is a bunch of. It does make me wonder. Does this happen every year, and it's just people are now coming forward with it because the Shador one happened? But most of the time, the players are like, "Oh yeah, I got some weird prank call," but it didn't mess with them the same way it did Shador, because this is a unique situation. Like, I wonder if this happens all the time, and it's just now we're getting this influx of them because Shador's
was prank calling him at two.
Ooh, yeah. Oh my gosh. What it was. They told him the Browns were taking him.
It's like, come on now, what are we doing here?
Who cares?
So did you see the John Elway story?
You were telling us about this yesterday. I had no idea about this.
So, I saw this story before the news that he passed away happened. But John Elway was on, he was at Stagecoach, whatever that is.
Mm-hmm.
With
the concert.
It's with you know, he's there with his agent, his longtime agent, Jeff Spurbeck, who's also his business partner. Now, they've got a winery together, Seven Cellars Wine. And somehow Jeff was like on the back of the golf cart. They were driving a golf cart, and John is driving it, and Jeff falls off, and he dies. He winds up dying from the injuries.
Dude,
this is tragic, and this was in like the Palm Springs area, and this was like this happened over the weekend, but he had just died yesterday, so he was in a very critical condition, and then he winds up dying, and you know, obviously they're saying like John's not a suspect or anything. In this thing at all at the moment.
No, it's just a freak thing.
It's a freak thing.
Falls back, hits his head on the asphalt.
Obviously, you're seeing people like, people are going to start asking questions about, you know, because there was no cops that were called. It was just medical personnel. But this is a tragic situation.
It's awful, dude. I mean, this, I'll be honest, you remember when we did the Live event? What was that event we did in Las Colinas, where we went to the Live golf event? And you remember we had to park, and then
it was at Merido,
and then the assistant or the tournament, they rode us over in a golf cart to the set because it was kind of far off. That thing was so hilly. You remember there were all
right.
Those. That was what was going through my mind was like, I'd almost rather walk because I'm worried I'm going to fall off of this thing and I'm gonna hit my head. I actually had a friend who died this way, not the golf cart, but just the. Again, one of those things where somebody hits their head on the asphalt like that, and then like it was a fight on 6th Street in Austin, and he was trying to defuse it, and he stepped in, and somebody came up and basically blindsided him, punched him, and he fell back, and he hit his head on the street, and like just what was a punch, like a drunken fight in the street, like it killed him.
My college roommate, they were on vacation somewhere, and his wife was driving. He had been drinking, and he got knocked out of the golf cart, hit his head on the sidewalk, and they removed like half of his skull. Like
Jeez.
He's got like his head looks normal because he's got a full head. He's got a coif of hair, but if you were to like touch his head, it kind of dips down like inner circle. Ooh. Like it's like half of his brain is gone.
Oh my gosh.
He's a little like he responds normally, but he's like a little bit slower to respond to certain things. Obviously, he's like he has half a head.
How do you get over this though? If you're Elway,
I don't know that you do. It's like your best friend. Like, I mean, it's like your longtime business partner or an agent.
It's an accident. Like, it's nothing he did, obviously. But I don't know how, like being present for something like that. Like, I don't know how people get through things like that. It's tough as hell.
Stars, Avs tonight, 8:30.
No, not 8:30.
Sorry, 8:48.
There you go. 8:51.
8:51.
I think we're going to get the closeout.
You think so?
We're going to get the closeout tonight.
Colorado is heavily favored tonight. They're minus 185. It's almost 2-1. It's about almost a 60% chance that Vegas is giving Colorado to win this thing and get to a game 7. I don't want anything to do with a game 7. I want nothing to close them out tonight. I told Reitman to go to the game. He's not doing it. You know, it's only like a 15-hour drive. He can make there in no time. Let's go.
Yeah, I know. He should go take one for the team.
I mean, if he leaves now, he would get there by the start of the third period.
Exactly. Now, you said it was how much? Is what are the odds that
it's like minus 185 for Colorado Stars plus 155.
Okay, it's dropped a little according to Money Puck. It's down minus 170. So we're doing okay.
All right.
Or no, wait, it's 180. That was the opening and then the other. But whatever, we're closing out tonight. And if we don't, Pete DeBoer doesn't lose game 7. So we don't have anything to worry about.
Also, Pete is 13-5 with the Stars off of losses in the playoffs. So it'd be even better.
It's a slam dunk. Real quick, Pete DeBoer did say yesterday that Miro still has some hurdles to clear. So it doesn't sound exactly like he's going to be ready tonight.
Would love to get him back. Now, obviously, if he's close, that means the next round is obviously much more likely.
That seems like that's in play.
That's
Robo
in play.
Is the one that seems just completely. Yeah. Why wasn't Kirby Yates more of a focus for them this offseason?
I think they had some financial constraints that they said, and Kirby Yates was outside of that.
David Robertson, is he? David Robertson. David Robertson, Is it more of a situation with him where if he wanted to be on a team, he would be on one, he just wants to retire?
I think he is just being really selective, and he set a financial bar and wasn't going to go below that because obviously there's no way someone who performed the way he performed last year wouldn't be playing. If he wanted to retire, then I think he would have just outright retired. But I think he had a select few teams that made sense to him. He lives up in Maine or New Hampshire. I forget which one, or Delaware. I don't know, somewhere up in the Northeast. I'm guessing that he probably wanted to stay closer to home and wasn't going to pitch for any, you know, any penny below whatever he felt like his value was. And obviously teams weren't willing to meet him there, or at least not. They haven't been yet.
Jared Sandler joins us here, 105 The Fan. Bobby used the term maddening earlier about, like, the Rangers offense. It's maddening. They're getting a lot of hits. They're just not getting guys over. They're still a competitive team. They're still a good team. I still think that they are a team that is going to compete for the AL West. But is that the word you would use to describe this team 30 games in? Because it's about the time where you can make judgments and assessments on the team.
Yeah, frustrating, maddening. I mean, a night like last night, for sure. I mean, it's 1-1. You get a great pitching performance from Nathan Eovaldi, who just can't get any run support whatsoever to save his life. I mean, hell, you know, he's won a couple of games. He won 1-0 and won another one, you know, against San Francisco that ended with a final score of 2-0. And, you know, he allowed a run on a bunt hit. I mean, credit Jacob Wilson. That was a nicely executed bunt that, drove in the only Athletics run. Wilson will hit the ball on the ground sometimes, so probably was doing that in part to stay out of a double play that could have ended the inning. Had he played into however Eovaldi was going to attack him, which I'm sure in that situation was to try and get him to do just that. And that's all the damage he gave up. I mean, he was outstanding. And I don't know which is more frustrating. Like if we would have looked back and it's like, man, they only had four hits. Right. Like they couldn't, but you know, they had plenty of opportunities. They had 11 at bats with runners in scoring position. And, Dolis' single in the fourth was the only hit. They had a couple of hard hit balls. Jacob Wilson made a diving play on a Jock Peterson ball up the middle that looked like it was going to squirt through for an RBI hit. And then in the eighth, Adolis Garcia hit a line drive to the right side and Nick Kurtz made a diving play. But, you know, at the end of the day, it shouldn't come down to that, right? You know, they had these opportunities. Now, it's good they're getting the opportunities. They're not a just totally dysfunctional, you know, group that's not getting on base, not doing anything here of late. They are starting to turn a corner there. But the control of the strike zone's got to be better, especially, you know, as the game went on, it looked like they started to expand a bit. And, they need to start scoring runs. They need to start taking advantage of the fact that they've got, you know, one of the best pitching staffs they've had in a long time. And this division's there for the taking, obviously, but it's not going to be a cakewalk. And I think that, you know, with the way the Mariners are playing this year so far, it kind of is giving you an idea that, you know, they might be the team to beat because they're pitching well, but they're also performing a lot better offensively than they have in recent years. And that's a tough combo to overtake, but the Rangers have the pitching to go toe-to-toe with the Mariners right now, but they need the lineup to do the same.
Jared Sandler joining us here on 105 The Fan. Jared, you mentioned Jock Peterson there. I know obviously he broke the hitless streak, but are you starting to see more than just that it's looking closer to he's potentially going to start turning a corner as he's, what, 5 of his last 15, and it looks like he's hitting the ball a lot harder?
Yeah, I mean, he had 3 balls at 100 miles an hour yesterday. You know, he wasn't doing that, when he was in that 0-for-41 or whatever it ended up as. And then, you know, one of the balls that he didn't hit 100 miles an hour was hit, like, in the mid-90s up the middle, and it was that diving play I alluded to earlier made by Jacob Wilson that saved a run. So it just looks like his at-bats are a lot more competitive. And, you know, he's important to this lineup, not because, you know, he's got the ability to be a middle-of-the-order presence in terms of his production, but, you know, he's someone who will take pitches. He's someone who will draw walks and just kind of change up the calculus of, you know, what is largely an aggressive group. So, when he's going well, or just going normally, he's going to help not just in whatever his box score production is, but just a guy who has a little bit of a different identity at the plate than, you know, what most of the lineup has, which is, like I said, a really aggressive group.
how long would you keeping? Are you keeping Wyatt at the leadoff?
Yeah, I mean, I like him there. If it's not going to be Marcus Semien, that's who I want leading off. Now, maybe against righties, they start to consider Josh Smith again. I don't know. But I, you know, to me, I want Wyatt leading off. I like his power speed combo there. I like the idea that he's going to get, you know, that extra plate appearance, every few games. There's data that suggests that, you know, no matter how you put your lineup together, as long as you have your nine best out there. But I don't, you know, that's one of those things where I don't know that it tells the full story and accounts for some of the intangibles. And I just think having like Wyatt leading off, can have a big impact. Now, you know, if Marcus Semien was performing like he did 2 years ago, then totally cool with Marcus leading off and having Wyatt hitting behind Corey and offering protection. But, that hasn't been the case so far, unfortunately, for Marcus. And so, I love the idea when Corey Seager comes back, hopefully on Saturday, that you go Wyatt Corey to start games off. And, you put your two best feet forward and go from there.
All right, so explain this to me, because we had always heard like that the numbers say your best hitter should hit two hole or whatever, like that things have changed. What is the new info that's out about just your best nine out there?
Well, yeah, it's not totally new. There have been studies in the past. I think one that says that putting your optimum lineup out there for 162 games accounts for 10 runs of difference, which equates to maybe one win.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I totally buy that. The most important spot in the order is, like you said, the two hole. And I know we used to think it was the three hole, but some of this data suggests that the three hole is actually the fifth most important spot. And one of the reasons why is because the three hole comes up a lot of times with two outs and nobody on. And that's not, that's not an advantageous run-creating spot, whereas the two-hole is going to come up more often than not, not with two outs necessarily, because their first at-bat is guaranteed to be with less than two outs, and possibly with a runner on. I think it goes, 2-1, and then I think the five-hole is actually the third most third most important spot, or I think it's like 2-1-5-4, 2-1-4-5, and then you get to the three hole.
Wow.
And then 6-7-8-9, I think is what some of the data shows. Now, again, it's one of those things where I think that maybe more often than not, that's how maybe you structure your lineup, but there are other things that go into play, right? Righty lefty matchups and how you present your lineup so that another team can or can't structure advantageous spots for them from a late inning situation with the bullpen. And then, how you blend speed and power, right? You don't want, maybe your best hitter hits two and then your second best hitter is a leadoff guy. But what if your second best hitter, is a station to station base runner? I mean, I think there are intangibles that you got to consider here, or I guess those would be tangibles. But I think in generally speaking, you typically put your best hitter second, and that's why you're seeing guys like Corey Seager hit second, and why, while before Wyatt moved to the leadoff spot, why he was hitting second.
Jared Sandlin joining us here on 105 Through the Fan. So, Jared, I saw Bochy had said yesterday the expectation Seager's going to be able to come back off the IL this weekend and will not need a rehab assignment. So everything seems full go there heading into next week?
Yeah, I think so. That's the plan. So hopefully we see him back in the lineup Saturday. He's kind of a hitting machine, and he's done this before where he hasn't had a rehab assignment. He has done it a couple times, but I want to say, he might have missed like 4 weeks back in 2023 or something, no rehab assignment, and came back and doubled in his first at bat. So he's unlike most. He's a 100th percentile type hitter, and I think that the good thing, Bobby, I think one reason why, it's only 10 days, and I think he's, for the most part, been able to be active with his swing prep, because it's a hamstring thing. He obviously hasn't been able to be full go, otherwise he'd be out there, but I think he's been able to stay comfortable with, most of his daily routine as far as his swing, and I think that's probably why he feels comfortable getting back in there without a rehab. And I think the other thing, too, is, Corey, as we've learned, he's not the most vocal guy. He's not going to go out and say things that you know, allow you to get this sense necessarily, but he is about as competitive as a guy as there is in that clubhouse. And I think he sees what's going on. You know, I think he sees that his lineup is scuffling, and I think he wants to get back there as soon as possible to try to do his part and help things out. And it would be great to get Wyatt and Corey in there together. You know, the baseball's prospectus has their own weighted runs created plus type stat, which, you know, for those who aren't familiar with weighted runs created plus, it's kind of an attempted catch-all offensive stat that simply tries to equate what the stat says, you know, a player's ability to create runs. And the Rangers are the only team that had two guys in the top 15, Corey Seager and Wyatt Langford. But unfortunately, those guys just haven't spent a lot of time in the lineup together. So hopefully you get Corey back. Those two can stay healthy and see where this lineup goes.
Anything else going on today, Jared?
No, we're doing something after the game that I guess if you guys don't mind, I'll tease ahead. One of the things that you know we thought would be fun to do is have you know a Pat McAfee does his little kicking thing on game day. Well, we're on our version of Rangers game day. We're going to bring some fan challenges throughout the year, give them opportunities to win things.
Oh, cool.
They can pull off some. Pull off some baseball feats, and so we're going to shoot one of those after the game here today. It will air tomorrow, and we're going to have a little bit of a home run derby, see if the fans can hit a ball out of the park. And I think they've got some cool things on the line if they're able to do it, and so I'm really excited. I'm going to actually be behind the plate for that. They're going to gear me up.
Dude.
They asked me my cup size. I told them, I reminded them I'm a nice little, you know, young Jewish boy.
you're a lefty though, right? You throw lefty, don't you?
I throw lefty. So, I mean, I'm not going to be catching 100.
Right.
It's going to be a machine. And hopefully these people can at least just make contact. So I don't have to worry about it. I've got a glove, but you're right. I don't have a catcher's mitt, but that's okay. We'll drop and block without it.
There we go, baby.
My hand is all bruised up. I mean, come on. I'm from the RJ Choppy School of Broadcasting. I'm just going to show up and do work, and then maybe you know go on a 2-week vacation. And
there we go.
Maybe not prep one day, but that's what the RJ Choppy School of Broadcasting right. teaches me. And I'm just going to show up and be a winner.
I think we were talking more about this, Jared.
That's right. It is his birthday.
It's the birthday boy, and he's going to be spending, like, he's going to go to the game, then he's going to do home run derby after. When are you going to fit in time for cake?
I don't know. Hopefully some pizza tonight. I'm lactose intolerant now, unfortunately, so I have to pick my spots with pizza, but I'm looking forward to a nice pizza and then a date on the, you know, in the bathroom afterwards, just because that's kind of how it goes in my life now. Hopefully get a Rangers win. I don't know what it's like. Do either of you guys have summer or baseball season birthdays? What, when are your birthdays?
June. September. So, yeah, baseball.
Okay. I mean, for me, it was like the first thing I'd look at when the Rangers schedule came out, do they play on my birthday? Who do they play?
Yep.
And I just was always looking forward to hopefully Juan Gonzalez hitting a home run on my birthday. And, you know, it'd just be nice if anyone hit a home run for the Rangers. They haven't hit a home run since last Thursday. It's been almost a week. So if they can go yard today, then I'll be happy and maybe get a W.
Happy birthday, brother. Talk to you later.
Thanks, fellas. Appreciate it.
Bye, Jared. Love
you. Jared Sandler, Rangers insider. He is not a fan. Boy, he is not happy with you. And I don't blame him.
When did you become such a cancel aware?
I'm not cancel aware, okay? It's respect.
I'll tell you what's coming up next. I'll tell you what's coming up next. I'm going to do 15 minutes of Jenny Kavner impressions. And then after that, is it just time for the Cowboys to give up on this player? That's next in Below
the Belt
right here on 105 Through the Fan.
The great Bobby Belt.
Bobby Belt. Is an idiot.
Don't make me take off my belt.
Don't make me take off my belt.
We're not.
Over to you, Bobby.
Are these Cowboys players a lost cause, or could they finally take off in 2025? Let's talk about it here in Below the Belt on 105.3 The Fan. All right, Chop, so we're going to play a little game here. I was thinking about this yesterday. And you asked Todd Archer earlier how much of the Cowboys potentially elevated themselves. And in 2021, they had a really good draft. They picked Micah Parsons. They got Osa Odighizuwa, Chauncey Golston, like guys who were contributing immediately for them. And a lot of people felt like that was the reason for their resurgence. Well, it wasn't just that aspect of it. It was also you had guys taking off and leveling up in a way that they hadn't played before. CeeDee Lamb, Trayvon Diggs, Tony Pollard stepped up, played really well then. Dalton Schultz had a big time performance. So you had guys step up and like really break out in a way that we hadn't seen from them before. So in order for this to work, in order for the Cowboys to really elevate themselves up from a 7-win team up to again a 11 or 12 win team, they're going to need guys who are going to break out and get out of the shackles of their potential bust label that some people have thrown around for them. So I'm going to name a Cowboys player still on their rookie deal. And we're going to talk about whether that player is already a bust, if it's settled, it's done, or if this is somebody who's finally going to break out and contribute in a meaningful way in 2025 and beyond. So you ready?
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's jump into it first. Number one, Sam Williams, who is entering his fourth season. He lost all of 2024 due to a knee injury. He picked up 4 sacks in each of his first 2 seasons as a rotational rusher. He has still never made a start in his career for the Cowboys, and he's a bit of a knucklehead. But Sam Williams, is that somebody who you're saying second-round pick, his future's already kind of settled, or do you think there's still a potential that he could tap into something and level up this year for Dallas?
Oh, I think there's potential. Now, obviously, what is he post-injury?
Sure.
That's always a question.
There was a lot of excitement about him last year before he got hurt.
Yes, there was. So, yeah, I'm still excited about Sam.
I think that Sam Williams is one who could potentially tap into it. The only thing that's a little bit interesting to me is you drafted Neyland in the second round last year. You signed Dante Fowler this offseason. You signed Peyton Turner. You drafted Donovan Ezeraku in the second round. Like, we're starting to run out of spots for him to get on the field.
Yeah.
Like, and so it makes me wonder where they look at his evaluation. Next player on this list, Jalen Tolbert. He was a third-round pick in 2022, barely registered as a factor his first 2 years. He improved last year, but he really didn't show much in the way of being a legitimate number 2 option in the NFL. He finished with 49 receptions, 610 yards, and 7 touchdowns. It did not feel like he scored 7 times last year. He may have been hurt the most by Dak Prescott's injury, as before Dak's injury, he was on pace for 64 catches and 750 yards, but then he averaged just 2 for 28 a game the rest of the way. So Jalen Tolbert, is he pretty much settled in your mind as a bust, or does he still have some breakout potential?
Year 3, you said?
This is year 4.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we are where we are with him.
We're settled at this point. It's such a different player than you saw on tape at South Alabama.
I like him. It's just something isn't clicking. I don't know if it's him and Dak together, but something's not clicking.
I don't know that he has the mental makeup to be on that island. Like, to be out by himself up against a corner, mano a mano, I just don't think he's got it. Which is weird because...
Then how did he get to the NFL?
I was going
to
say at Tennessee... We're not at Tennessee. At South Alabama, that was on tape when he would play Tennessee or others. He torched Alante Taylor at Tennessee 1 year and just absolutely dog-walked him and would score a touchdown and turn right around and...
I don't even know who that is.
Well, he's an old corner for Tennessee.
Yeah, and I went to school there and I don't even know
exactly
who that is.
He was a top 50 pick. But Jalen Tolbert used to, like, talk serious smack on the field as a college player. And then he got to the NFL and it looked like a different makeup, a different player. All right, next on this list... We're doing bust or breakout here. Mozzie Smith. Complete and utter failure in 2023 as a rookie. It was better last year, and there were some games that were even really good, but it was wildly inconsistent. And the swings aren't just... I mean, they're aggressive, and they are wide. He's awful and doesn't look like he should be on a football field, too. Oh, my gosh, he's playing really great, dominant football here, and there's not a lot of in-between. So, Mozzie Smith, this will be year 3 here. Are you settling into Mozzie's a bust? You got to move on.
Mozzie's a bust.
You're settled on that one. Why? Why with him? Because like Tolbert, you seemed like you had a little bit more hesitation on, and he's been playing longer. Why does Mozzie click for you so quickly as a bust? I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just curious. Is it a mental makeup thing? An approach?
I think it's just I'm not willing to wait around for the position.
It's funny. Vach Lombardi said last week, Tyler Booker had been talking about how much he likes to hit people and stuff like that. And he was saying that he believed him. He said it was a stark contrast to when Mozzie told you. Mozzie used to tell people, like, ooh, I love playing football because I just like to hurt people. And Vach was like, man, you didn't look like that on tape in Michigan. That didn't look like what you love about football. You were just out there, like, balling guys and playing mean football.
Yeah, like, I think that, you know, there are certain plug-and-play positions.
Yeah.
Was it closer to the ball?
Sure. So you think defensive tackle, you should
be able to impact
games pop earlier,
faster. Wide receiver, I get it. You know, I can understand it. I mean, there's a lot to learn about the NFL versus college, but I'm also willing to wait more on a wide receiver. It's just a position that's the replacement cost of finding a wide receiver is just more difficult than a tackle, defensive tackle.
Next up here, tight end Luke Schoonmaker. Now, Schoonmaker has failed across the board because he was somebody who was he was supposed to be a dominant blocker immediately.
Yeah.
So Schoonmaker has failed to flash as the blocker that many thought he was at Michigan, and he's failed to develop into the receiving threat many believed he could grow into when Dallas selected him. He is averaging about one catch for 10 yards a game over his two-year career while playing about one-third of the offensive snaps during that time. Tight end, to be fair, though, like you mentioned about positions that click right away, tight end has historically not been one. Occasionally you get guys across the NFL that do it, but a lot of tight ends take about 2-3 years to develop.
I'd probably be out. You could find a Luke Schoonmaker.
Do you believe that he has a better chance to develop into who he's going to be than Mozzie does just because of the factor of the position he plays, though?
Maybe, yeah.
Because, I mean, when we think back of Martellus Bennett took a long time to click. A guy who came through a couple different teams. Scott Chandler took a long time to click. Dalton Schultz didn't really click till year 3 or 4. Anthony Fasano clicked in Miami after he left here. So, yeah, it's a position that doesn't always snap right away.
So I'm not saying I'm out on him. It's just like I could find another Schoonmaker. But I do think that he has a better chance of.
Is he at the point now? Obviously, as a rookie, you wouldn't do it because he's a second round pick. But is he 2 years into this now? Is he the type of player, or you think you've seen enough to where if you believe an undrafted free agent is better than him, you'd be comfortable cutting the second round pick?
Yeah.
Because as a rookie, obviously, it doesn't matter if an undrafted free agent plays better than the second round or the second rounder staying. But heading into year 3, do you feel like I've seen enough?
And I wonder if that's a smart thing to do either way.
Well, because like, you got to give him a little time to show you who you are.
Right.
So if the second rounder, like you got to keep him because you still believe who he is. But after 2 years and then a third training camp, do you just say, well, I think I've got an idea.
At this point, you know.
All right, let's talk about the guys who they drafted last year, who everybody seems to have made up their minds on in a lot of ways. Marshawn Nealand. Nealand didn't play poorly overall as a rookie. He flashed a few positive games, particularly as a run defender, but the pass rush tools still look like they're a ways away from being an advantage. He also dealt with injuries, missed 6 games. Is Nealand a guy that when you look at him, you go, I'm still willing to give him time to develop, or is it just like that pass rush stuff is never going to be there, so that was not worth a second-round pick?
This is year, what year did you say?
Year 2.
Oh, I'm waiting.
Okay.
And that's too early.
He's got tools. He's just, it didn't flash very much last year. Kalen Carson, thought to be a complete steal in the 5th round of last year's draft and a guy the Cowboys were really high on after training camp. He completely melted down once the regular season began. He was a constant target for opposing offenses, took several bad angles on tackles that led to larger gains. He was on Instagram a lot, posting his rap music.
I don't care.
Is that a guy that you think that, but like as a 5th rounder, you're probably willing to more say, I've made up my mind who that is, than you would a second rounder?
I would be, yes, in a faster way, but I still need to give somebody more time.
And this is the one we've been building towards, the one that everybody feels like is willing to call a bust right now, and it runs counter to just how long he's been playing. Tyler Guyton, who played 1 year, went viral for stonewalling Micah Parsons during training camp practices. We were out there at training camp, he was beating Micah. He was locking him up. And then looked completely overwhelmed once the regular season started, looked unprepared, bad technique, had a bunch of unnecessary penalties, a lot of pressure from pass rushers, busted run plays. But the traits appear to be there. The question is whether people believe he can put it all together. But, man, can you think about how fast we flipped from look at him dominate Micah in these training camp practices to now people believe there's no way he'll ever put it together after one season, basically. I'm not ready to give up on Tyler Guyton, but I'm curious if you fall down in
too soon.
I know you're generally not a rash reactor. The fan base, it feels like, has. They were reacting so poorly to it, to Tyler Guyton's performance last year, that I saw people arguing against the Tyler Booker pick, and they were pointing to, well, they don't know how to pick offensive linemen anymore. You can tell because they picked Guyton, and Guyton's clearly a bust.
The Cowboys... I know it's different, right?
By the way, on the YouTube tax stack, why are you asking if a player in a second year is a bust already? Because people are freaking saying it.
I can't say that's too.
Jump
soon.
Out of the YouTube tax stack. I don't
give it. It's too
soon.
It's too soon for me. Remember Steven Peterman?
Yes, third rounder, 2004.
They got rid of him quick.
Yes,
he goes to Detroit. Has a nice career.
Yeah,
like a really nice career. I can't remember if he was drafted as a guard or a tackle.
Guard.
But I knew he played guard for Detroit. But, like, you got to give these guys some time. Like, second year, that's too early for me to even have. I can't even have that thought after 1 year.
People had that thought about Schoonmaker and Mozzie after 1 year, and now they're really sticking to it in year two. Or the second year seemed to show the same thing. A lot of people seem to just think if you pop, you're going to pop right away. But I agree. It is too soon.
Yeah.
Carson is the one of the three that I would say, I think I maybe saw some stuff that concerned me enough in his mental space that said, I don't know that he's going to hit.
Maybe. Maybe. But like, I'm not ready to even remotely come up with that determination on a first round pick after year one. That's just me. B-Lo.
D-Belt.
On 105.3 The Fan. We have made it to the 9 o'clock hour. The Lukers are out of the playoffs. We finally get to know Anthony Davis. All coming up next. 9 o'clock hour. Sean and RJ on The Fan.